We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Beers with Bloys, a refreshing conversation over a beverage with Minnesota's political players. Brought to you by Minnesota's corn growers.
Minnesota corn farmers and their families play a pivotal role in our state. From investing millions of dollars in third-party research to help further develop best practices on the farm, to driving economic development on Main Street and in the metro, corn farmers are continuously working to improve and become better stewards of our state's natural resources, all while maintaining a thriving rural economy. Learn more at mncorn.org.
And by North Central States Carpenters Union.
The North Central States Carpenters Union represents 27,000 carpenters across Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska. They lead in training, educating, and representing the next generation of skilled construction professionals. They equip their professional craftsmen with skills that are demanded in today's construction industry. As a union, they are dedicated to protecting and elevating the economic and social condition of all carpenters and working families.
Here's your host, Bloys Olson.
Well, welcome to Beers with Bloys. It's September, but it's summer out, and I'm with State Senator Eric Pratt. Eric, cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining me today. Full disclosure, we are not in your district. We're across the street from what they call homecoming for political hacks, the Minnesota Business Partnership Dinner. And so we're both having a Pacifico, but I promise I will get down to the district and enjoy a local brew down there.
Oh, we got some great crafts, whether it's Shakopee Brew Hall, Badger Hill, Boathouse Brothers, Rhodes. We're really blessed to have some good local brewers.
It's good. So you really kind of made a name for yourself during the last session, working really hard on wage theft. Mm-hmm. And, you and I had known each other a little while, but I really kind of watched that as one of those issues that, frankly, it took a while for somebody to explain to me how it worked. And once they did, I said, well, go get those guys. Like, who doesn't pay their employee? Like, it just seemed, but it affects a different part of the economy than you and I might not see every day. So talk about how wage theft came on your radar and why you took such an active role in that legislation.
Well, it really came on my radar just having a conversation about the topic and not knowing that it was an issue. And having the same really reaction that you did. Well, if you earn a wage, you should be paid a wage.
Right.
It's that simple. That's not a partisan issue. That's something we should all be able to agree on. And so I kind of dug into it. I looked at, what the House was proposing, and I think kind of along the way that I normally try to work issues, I talk to as many stakeholders as I can to
Yep.
try to get their perspective on it. I mean, in my mind, it's a fairly isolated issue, but one that we want to make sure that everybody who works in Minnesota has the same protections.
Yeah, and we should just detail, because listeners might not know either, one of the places that I came to understand it was if you're a day laborer or somebody who kind of works a project for a week, mm-hmm. that if I'm hiring you and I say, at the end of the week, I'll give you $500 if you finish this job, mm-hmm. and Friday comes and I only give you $300, and you have no recourse to come back.
That's right.
And that's BS is what I would say. And then, let's face it, these are some of the folks who are working hard. I talk about a story about roofers in 90-degree weather that I saw at a liquor store one day, and I said, it's 95 degrees. I want to buy them a beer for working on that roof all day, mm-hmm. and I hope they got paid what they, what they were supposed to be paid.
Yeah. So. Well, and it's a lot of that. It's a day laborer. It's someone who's working on a job, and they're working, let's say they're working 10, 12 hours a day, and they're not making overtime like they should.
Right.
Not making, And their only recourse was to take their employer to court. It was amazing that if I steal your car, I'm arrested. But if I steal your wages, that wasn't a crime.
Right.
And so that was one of the epiphanies that we had where we in the House could agree on, is that we could make this a crime.
Yeah.
Now, what we wanted to make sure was, at least in the Senate, was that if there was a mistake made, and
yep.
I use the example of my daughter where she worked in a restaurant and she was paid one wage if she was waitressing or bartending, and she was paid another wage if she was working in the back
mm-hmm.
because she wasn't working for tips there. And if she forgot to clock out, worked in the back at the higher wage, the employer might make a mistake.
Right.
Pay her the wrong amount, she could go and ask for
yep.
it. That's not what we were trying to do. We were trying to catch the bad actors that were really trying to defraud.
Yeah.
They might be charging a roofer $50 a day for a hammer.
Yep.
They might be, they might do exactly what you said. They might not be paying overtime, or they might not be paying for any hours worked
right.
above a certain amount.
Or somebody gets expenses and they don't reimburse them and
exactly.
they take it out of their wages.
Yeah. So those were the types of things that we were trying to cover, just to make sure that everyone was being treated fairly under the law and that there was recourse to be able to do it. Give the Department of Labor the tools to go after someone like a criminal.
Your background, you said you moved to Prior Lake in junior high.
Yeah.
Then you went Prior Lake High School and on to college. I didn't know you were a college football player. It's college football season. So tell the story. Like, you played at Prior Lake and
I played at Prior Lake, and our teachers went on strike my senior year, so I didn't get the recruiting offers I wanted to, but I loved the game.
Okay.
I went down to University of Iowa
okay.
as a walk-on, and I dislocated my knee.
Okay.
Then I went back out in the spring and broke my wrist.
Okay.
And Iowa said, you're too accident prone. We're kind of done with you.
I was going to suggest that maybe it was time to retire then. But
Joe Salem didn't want me at the U.
Okay.
And so I ended up at University of Colorado. I wanted to play defense because I always thought it was better to hit than be hit.
Yeah.
And they let me play defense. And I had a great experience with Bill McCartney.
Okay.
Who's now a Hall of Fame coach. He won a national championship
yep.
after I graduated. There's something about team sports that teaches you a lot of lessons about lives, but it builds lifelong friendships as well.
So are you still pretty active watching college football and following the Buffaloes?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Okay.
I even changed my TV subscription so I could catch the Pac-12 network.
Got it. And do you ever go to games or get together with any of the old guys?
I try to get out to a game once a year.
Okay.
And hook up with my old teammates. We started a charity called Buffs for Life.
Okay.
To help former athletes who are going through trouble.
Okay.
A couple of my teammates died unexpectedly, one from an illness, one just kind of in his sleep.
Okay.
And so we want to help the families of those old players
yep.
recover from that loss and let them know that once you're in our Buffalo fraternity, you're always in our Buffalo fraternity.
Sounds great. How are they going to be this year?
It's a rebuilding year. it was always nice to beat Nebraska,
mm-hmm.
and they were always our rival. I remember when my senior year, we beat them for the first time in 20 years.
Wow.
So we had turned it around, and so it's always, again, that was fun, but the loss to Air Force last week was tough.
Got it.
Again, in overtime.
Got it. Today you did a news conference on insulin.
Uh-huh.
It's been a hot issue since the end of the session. I think you were with Senator Benson and Senate Majority Leader Gazelka today, and you kind of laid out what I would assume is kind of the Senate Republican position as we enter these next couple months of trying to figure out if we're going to do something before next session.
Mm-hmm.
What did you guys talk about?
Well, certainly there's been a lot of political talk around insulin affordability.
Yep.
And House Democrats put out an emergency insulin bill. Now, when it fell apart at the end of session, I joined a group of bipartisan senators kind of working behind the scenes to see if we could come to an agreement. I had a lot of concerns with that bill.
Okay.
First of all, while the news reported that we, couldn't agree on funding, that was true. But we also couldn't agree on how to help people in a longer term. The House bill gave people insulin for 90 days, but didn't have an answer for them after 90 days.
Okay.
So if I have to do 90 days worth of insulin in January, how do I get through the rest of the year?
Yeah.
Insulin's not any more affordable. Their plan took 9 to 12 months to get implemented. I wanted to make sure that we could get something implemented more quickly.
Yep.
And I'd like to really find a way to help people afford their insulin that are struggling before they hit the crisis mode, before they start rationing it. And so that's really the outline of our plan. And not to create a whole big bureaucracy that's going to live on forever, we need to address the price of prescription drugs in a more comprehensive way, not drug by drug along the line. And so we set up a temporary program. We're running it through, I call it a direct-to-consumer approach. So we're going to set up a landing page on MinSure. We're going to verify that somebody makes they meet the income caps of 400%, which for a single person, that could be just under $50,000. And for a family of four, it's over $100,000. So we're catching a lot of people. They reconnect with their doctor. We're trying to fortify that doctor-patient relationship.
Yep.
Not just make this a pharmacy transaction.
Okay.
And then the insulin manufacturers will send the product to the doctor so that it can be temperature controlled and then give it to the patient.
Okay. Do you see action on this before session?
I'll say what we said at the press conference today, and that's we sent the governor the bill.
Okay.
And we're looking forward to engaging with him.
Okay.
I mentioned that there's been a lot of political rhetoric on this.
Yeah. I've been amazed. I will tell you that in putting together the newsletter and following the energy around insulin, to me, I agree, there's been a lot of political rhetoric. It's coming literally from every which way.
Yeah.
And so that's why I find it interesting kind of see how each side has boiled it down.
Well, and we actually have politicians that are fundraising on other people's misery, and I just find that shameless. I've been trying to do this in a very non-political way. I met with Representative Mike Howard to talk about it after the bipartisan group broke up, and we kind of agreed that for me to really think outside the box and to address the concerns that I had with his bill, we had to come up with a Senate plan. So that's why you see a Senate plan separate from a House plan, rather than kind of working together, because Representative Howard and I realized that we needed to do that in order to come together.
Okay. So you've now been in the Senate since 2012, 2013. You've been in the majority, you've been in the minority. Next year's a big year. Senate is kind of where a lot of business people and conservatives are saying, we've got to hold the majority there. Are you going to run for re-election? What are you thinking?
I'm going to run for re-election in the Senate.
Okay.
And exactly for the reason you said. I don't know if it's a lot of business people. I haven't talked to them. In my mind, we have to have a dissenting voice. When I look at some of the things that the House of Representatives proposed, would fundamentally change the state of Minnesota. For me, it's more important to keep the Minnesota Senate as a dissenting voice in the state.
Yep.
As I would like to say, the voice of reason in the state.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure my colleagues on the other side of the aisle would disagree with that. And make sure that Minnesota stays a great place to live.
Okay. It's no surprise, it's been whispered about all over town, that you might have thought about running for Congress. How serious were you?
I looked at it.
Okay.
But again, it's in some ways it didn't feel like the right time. In some ways, just keeping this Senate seat is extremely important to me. And I really enjoy it because I'm representing the area I grew up in. As you mentioned, I moved there when I was in junior high. So moved around before that. So this is my hometown.
Yep.
My mom was a teacher in Shakopee for 25 years. I went to high school at junior high in Prior Lake. That's where my memories are. That's where we raised our children.
Okay.
And so I just take a lot of pride in being able to represent a place that I love.
It's changed a little since you grew up there.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Talk about just how much it's changed and what you still learn about your own district.
So when I was growing up, Prior Lake was about 5,000 or 6,000 people. Today we're at about 26,000, 27,000.
Okay.
Shakopee was the big town at about 10,000. They're at over 40,000. They're actually their own house district.
Yeah.
Which is just amazing. And I think of my predecessor, the district went from Chanhassen almost all the way down to Lucerne.
Correct.
And now I've got two-thirds of a county.
Yeah.
As we continue to be a growing district. I served on the school board for 12 years before I ran for the Senate. And so I had a firsthand view of the growth that we were experiencing. The challenges of how you bring in that many new people.
And build.
Build infrastructure, build schools, build roads.
Yeah.
Bring in new businesses because you have to have grocery stores and you have to have remove the post office. We had to expand the post office. And we were, and I think we still are, one of the fastest growing counties in the country.
No, I think you are. And I think about the, 30 or 40 years that I've ventured down there for one thing or another, and now it's usually hockey, just how much the area has changed. But I will say that I still like to just stop by the Donut Hut in Shakopee just because it's a little nostalgic for me. As you look then at 2020, obviously you talked about insulin. Insulin's going to be one of those kind of, I'll call them shiny bright objects on the election trail. What are the other issues that you hear about day to day that maybe you don't hear about at party meetings or in caucus, but that everyday Minnesotans might call you or stop you and say, hey, I got an issue with this, or do this or don't do that?
You know, what I hear a lot, and especially as being chair of the Jobs Committee, is we have a lot of regulation. We have a lot of bureaucracy that really hampers the ability of small businesses to start and thrive. You're a small businessman. You know, it's, for the first few years, it's really, really hard. 80% of new businesses fail in the first 3 years. And many times, owners don't take profits or get paid themselves or paying their employees for maybe 5 or 10 years that the business is open. And yet we continue to pile on regulation. That's why with wage theft, I wanted to make sure that it wasn't necessarily
onerous
and punitive process if you're really trying to do the right thing. So what I hear a lot, at least from the people in my district, is leave us alone.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting in where we go this coming session. And I'd like to see us move to get some of the mining and pipeline projects approved, put good paying jobs in the hands of Minnesotans. I was up in Duluth talking to the Port Authority about some of the economic development that they'd like to do. We met with the 49ers in their training center and really seeing how they are training the workforce of tomorrow without any government support. It's fascinating, all the things that are going on, and what a great place and a great economy we could be if sometimes we just get out of the way and let it thrive.
Did you get to, when you were with the 49ers, did they let you behind the
toys? To run the crane and the bulldozer.
That's a fun trip, isn't it? You got a little pushback, even from Republicans, on wage theft. Have you felt anything more since it's passed or anything?
Well, I think the big thing is the rollout and the implementation has been a little confusing from the Department of Labor.
Okay.
Some things that we didn't intend are being... Or some of the things like employee notification are being guided the wrong way by the Department of Labor. So, for instance, my wife has been with her company for 33 years.
Right.
And she got one of our new employee notices that were only supposed to be given to employees that started July 1st or after.
Okay.
Because
maybe she got a new job, Senator. I'm just kidding.
I'm hearing from businesses that keeping these forms and getting them signed for every little change, they can't get bonuses, they can't get merit raises. Well, that's not what we intended. You know, the notification that we talked about could have been on a performance review, it could have been an email. It was supposed to be as simple as possible. So I'm working with Senate Council, I'm working with the business community to try to get that word out to business owners that this isn't onerous. And trying to meet with the Department of Labor to make sure that how they're guiding the compliance with this law is consistent with the legislative intent.
Okay. You referenced your wife. You referenced your kids. How many kids? What are they up to? What do they keep you busy doing?
Well, I'm really proud of my kids. My son, Cam, is 24.
Okay.
He graduated from the University of Colorado with a degree in astronomy and physics.
Okay.
And he's getting his doctorate in astrophysics from the University of Michigan.
So you're actually going to have an astro scientist in the
house? I'm going to have a rocket scientist in the
family. Wow. Okay.
So when you say it's not rocket
science. Was he a football player?
He played football when he was younger. He actually had a brain injury that knocked him out of football and wrestling.
I'm familiar with those.
My daughter, Sammy, graduated from Texas State this year with a degree in exercise and sports science. And she's working in Austin, Texas, and applying to physical therapy schools.
It's a horrible town.
Oh, she hates it. She loves it.
You should never go visit her.
Well, we moved her this summer, and it was 104 degrees. And it was hot for a Minnesota guy to be lifting.
So I'm just telling you, when you want a break right before legislative session starts, it's pretty good in January, and I know you golf. And so it's actually one of the places that I escape for the weekend to go golf, because it's not a golf destination, but you can golf. And, of course, the food is amazing. And they seem to be recruiting people from Minnesota regularly because Spencer Kronk, former commissioner of administration and city administrator for the city of Minneapolis, is now the city administrator for Austin. So just beware. They might try to get you to run for Senate down there.
Well, you know, I hear a Texas summer is easier to survive than a Minnesota winter. So
wow, that's saying a lot. It's good. As you look at 2020 in your district, anything changed significantly since you last ran? You've seen a lot of growth.
I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, I have 1,000 new homes going in my district.
Wow.
We've got orderly annexation. Both Shakopee and Prior Lake have orderly annexation agreements with some of the townships.
Okay.
Spring Lake Township has a detailed area plan that they've run through the county and the Met Council to switch over some farmland to rural residential housing.
Okay.
And so growth is the biggest thing. Growth in my district, if you drive into Prior Lake today, we've got a lot of construction going on because we have to add lanes to our roads. We have to change and add intersections to accommodate the new traffic. But honestly, the town hadn't changed much since I was a kid. Now we're starting to feel the pressure of having that many new people. I talked to our mayor that for every new house we add in the city of Prior Lake, adds 10 car trips a day through the city. And so if you have a development, let's
that's
say a
10-acre
development, and I have 20 houses, right? Do the math.
200 new car trips
a day.
It's almost as good as trying to drive in downtown at Minneapolis at rush hour.
I don't think there's
it's not quite like that. We joked because we were both stuck in a little traffic getting here. I think of some of the employers that have built large facilities down there, Shutterfly, Amazon. What about workforce housing? Is that emerging as more of an issue that people want to have a way to live closer to those places? Because we know that they've been having to bus people from other parts of the state and the city to find workers.
Well, we actually have a goal down in Scott County. So we have a group that we call SCALE, which pulls together the county, the cities, the townships, school districts, everybody who has a stake in our county from an economic development standpoint. And we want 50% of our residents to live and work in Scott County.
Okay.
You know, so that's certainly on top of mind, is making sure that we have affordable housing for the types of jobs we're bringing in. Because we don't want to bus in workers. We want to be able to have people live, work, and raise their families all in one community, in one area. And that's why, but we have some unique challenges in some of our cities as far as the cost of construction.
Yeah.
We have a very clay soil with a lot of lakes, as you can imagine, sewage runs downhill, and lakes are usually the lowest point.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot of lift stations to try to keep those out. So we have some unique challenges that make construction a little more expensive and a little more difficult to do. But quite honestly, the city of Prior Lake and the Mittawakaton Sioux came together and partnered on a water treatment facility. so that the tribe benefited and the city benefited and both got a cost savings from it. Those are the types of relationships, those are the types of deals that we can make when we're all working together.
What is the relationship, because it's changed and it seems to continue to evolve, the relationship with the Midwakanen Sioux in the district? Because obviously they're a major economic engine, and from the time you grew up in the area, they've really become that dominant.
Yeah. Well, I used to, you know, and back in the day, I used to work for them at the Little Six Bingo Hall.
I had a flashback to Little Six Bingo just as I asked that question. So,
and you know, we are an entertainment, we're a destination.
Yeah.
When you have the lakes like Prior Lake, Fish Lake, when you have golf courses like the Legends, the Wilds, Stonebrook, and the Meadows, when you have Valley Fair, Canterbury Park, Mystic Lake, the Renaissance Festival, we have 10 million visitors coming from out of the area into our county.
Okay.
And so it's changed a little bit from, because when I was growing up, we had a lot of ag.
Right.
I had a lot of friends that were dairy farmers.
Right.
And so the industry's changed, the economy's changed. We've got a lot more people, but the relationship with the tribe has been good.
Okay.
We had some thoughtful city leaders and county leaders, I think, realized that we needed to improve that relationship.
Okay.
Many, many years ago, my predecessor, Claire Roebling, was one of those folks,
yep.
Which has made it easier for me to develop a relationship and work with the tribe.
Okay. Look ahead. Bonding. There's quite a delta between what Democrats are talking about and what Republicans are talking about, but it also applies to jobs, and you're the jobs chair.
Yes.
How do you look at what we're going to bond for in the next legislative session?
Well, I'm a former banker, and so I look at bonding as it's great to borrow a lot of money.
Yeah.
You have to pay it back.
Yep.
And so Representative Vogel and I have actually talked on many occasions, and I've approached the idea of trying to limit how much we can bond based upon our tax receipts to make sure that we had enough money to make those payments. And to be able to say, well, look at the bonding capacity we have, we can use all this up in 1 year, I think is very short-sighted. We still have to be very cautious. We still have to be very conservative in how we look at borrowing on the state's dime.
Shocking view coming from a banker.
Well, there you go.
And a Republican. Senator Eric Pratt, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Cheers.
I enjoyed it.
And we'll talk soon.
Beers with Blois is brought to you by North Central States Carpenters Union.
The North Central States Carpenters Union represents 27,000 carpenters across Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska. They lead in training, educating, and representing the next generation of skilled construction professionals. They equip their professional craftsmen with skills that are demanded in today's construction industry. As a union, they are dedicated to protecting and elevating the economic and social condition of all carpenters and working families.
Also brought to you by Minnesota's Corn Growers.
With nearly 7,000 members, Minnesota Corn Growers Association is one of the largest grassroots farm organizations in the United States. Working closely in partnership with the Minnesota Corn Research and Promotion Council, MCGA, identifies and promotes opportunities for Minnesota's 24,000 corn farmers while building connections and educating the non-farming public.
See you next time for more Beers with Blois.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Here. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.